Greetings, fiends. We're back with a final, for now, episode recap of Interview with the Vampire, brought to you by the degenerate scum over at AMC+.
Well, just tell us how you really feel.
I don't know. I thought that was fairly befitting. I don't think you're here to argue with me about that.
Oh, I'm not. I just thought it was very funny. Oh, dear. So, at least it's over for now.
For now.
I know there will be a season two. But
why can't we be a Sandman podcast? Let's be a Sandman podcast now. They got renewed.
Yes, I know. Lots of shows did. I still haven't heard if Vampire Academy got renewed, actually. I should find out.
Huh. Oh, yeah, we still have to watch that. I think it would be fun to watch that as me, who has never seen and knows nothing about Vampire Academy, and you, a book person. And we'll just watch your blood pressure rise even more. As if this show didn't already damage your health enough.
It's okay. I just haven't, you know, it's just been eating my entire Sunday for weeks, but that's okay. So before we get started on episode 7, we're just going to go back and I've got a couple corrections and notes for episode 6 and just previous episodes. Chell, do you remember how we kept calling Roland Jones Roland James?
Yes.
So one of my friends who listens to the podcast, I did not actually ask her if I could say her name, so I will just say, hello, I love you, you're awesome, and thank you for listening. She pointed out that the reason we probably keep calling him Roland James or Roland James, and it sounds right to us, is because we've got VC on the brain, and Roland James sounds like Rolgan James.
No, but that's okay.
I mean, it does. I think that's why it sounds right to me, because it does sound like Rolgan James, who is the villain of Tale of the Body Thief.
I can say with absolute 100% confidence for myself, no. But
okay,
for you, sure.
That might be why I was doing it, because it does sound very similar. And yeah. Interestingly enough, I'm just going to say this for no reason. Rolgan James in that book takes Lestat's body, uses it for his own purposes, thinks he's doing better things with it than Lestat could, and refuses to give it back.
Mm.
So I'm just going to throw that out there. Also, Antoine is the musician from Interview with the Vampire. We had a couple people on social media point that out to us, so thank you so much. I do appreciate it. I actually looked it up after we recorded, because I have Prince Lestat on my Kindle, and so I just kind of searched and went through that book. I looked up a couple things, actually, and I was like, oh, and then I had to sit there and edit the podcast with me saying that and listen to it like 5 times and feel like a dumbass. So anyway, yes, same character. It is the same musician. He does come back in Prince Lestat. Also, I just want to say Antoinette was not yet a vampire in episode 6. I'm really sorry. That was my bad. I blame AMC's player, because I was stopping to take notes as I watched. And every time you hit pause on their player, it just like covers the whole screen in this weird like film, and it's very dark. And so I think I thought she had fangs. She just has big teeth, which is fine. But she was not yet a vampire. That was just my mistake. For this episode, I actually watched it first straight through and then did the notes, because I wanted to make sure I was paying close attention and not getting distracted by the little overlay that was on there every time I hit pause. And then I rewatched the bar scene from last episode a couple times, because I really didn't like it. And I was trying to figure out what about it I really didn't like, because it's not a bad scene. It just bothered me a lot. And I was like, well, is it just me being like a cranky fan of the books who's like, this isn't what I want from this show? Or is there something wrong with the scene? I think it boils down to like, I just don't understand what Louis's hoping to get out of the interview from this interaction. Like, it doesn't feel like he cares about that at all. And in the book, he's super isolated and alone, and he wants to tell his story. But in the show, he's with Rashid, so he's not alone or isolated. And it kind of seems like he's flirting with Daniel, and he's like, you know, asking about what's in his bag. And then when Daniel starts talking about his interviews and he sounds kind of like excited talking about his work, Louis's immediately like, oh, but that's not what you care about. You care about drugs, and kind of shuts that down. So it's just like, does Louis just want to sleep with him? Is that the goal? Like, these vampires can have sex. Is that what this is? I'm not entirely sure. That's the only real read I get on it. Even when he asked, like, if Rashid wants to come, and Rashid is like, no, you go have your fun. Like, I was just like, especially because, like, the vampire line is such a throwaway. Like, Daniel asks if he's a narc, and he's like, no, I'm a vampire, and they kind of laugh about it. Mm-hmm. He's not, like, sitting there going, I have a story for you. I'm a vampire, which would have been like, I actually want to tell you my story. So I don't know. I just don't really like how they approached it. I feel like it feels just really hollow, and it's just a boring interpretation of a scene that is literally the inciting incident for the entire series. Daniel's willing to go to his place and do drugs, which, why does Louis even have drugs? Do vampires in this universe do drugs? I don't
know. I think he was just like, I don't know. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, I really just didn't like the scene. I think the most generous read on the scene you can get is that maybe Louis sees Daniel as powerless and he's struggling with addiction. And so he wants to, like, maybe tell him his story to help. But then, like, he also just offers him drugs. And it seems like he really just wants to get him home and do things. So I don't know. Anyway, I just don't like it. But I was trying to figure out why. And that's kind of what I came up with.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he was intending to feed on him. Who knows? And maybe he was just, maybe he was reading his mind and he was like, oh, this guy's a, you know, like a journalist. He's kind of interesting. I just have to play it cool and quick. Be human for a minute. What would this human want? Oh, he wants this. Okay, I will offer it to him if that will bring him back. Because I can't just say like, hey, I'm a vampire, interview me, because people think that's crazy. I don't know. But then they don't like explain that. Like, we're left to interpret that, and which is lazy writing on their part.
It is lazy writing. And also, like, this is a guy who does interviews for a living and wants to find interesting people. Saying you're a vampire is interesting. Like, if he was really interested in giving the interview, it would have been like, I have a great story for you. I'm a vampire. And that's a great story. Why wouldn't you be excited to interview someone who thinks they're a vampire? That's literally why Book Daniel goes with him in the first place. So I just wish they had done more of that and built that up more than the whole, I've got drugs. And Daniel being like, sure, I want drugs. And if I have to sleep with you to get them, I'm cool with that, I guess. But like, it just felt like he didn't really care about the interview part, which makes it even weirder that he's like upset that it went badly at the end. And now they're redoing it too. So that's a whole other thing, which we still don't really know why they're doing a second interview, and they have not explained it. So I don't know. But anyway, don't like the scene. Don't love how it plays out. It is exactly what we knew was going to happen from what Daniel tells us in like the first episode, that he was at the bar to score drugs and that's how they met. So
right,
it is what it is. And then I mentioned vampire science last episode. I forgot to mention that I was thinking that they would use the vampire science to like win the vampire war that's apparently coming from like the great conversion or whatever. Vampires are going to start this great vampire war. I was wondering if that was like going to be the plot. But the more I think about it, the more I think that Fareed was just supposed to be an Easter egg. Like, they just kind of thought, oh, we have a doctor character. There's a doctor character in the books. Let's just name him that. And so I don't know that it has any more meaning than that. I honestly think I'm just reading into all this stuff way too much and giving the writers a little too much credit. And they're just throwing this stuff in there as little Easter eggs for book fans, I guess. I don't know why they're doing that instead of just writing the book story. But okay, that's what we're getting, I guess. So
thanks, I hate it.
Yeah. So that's all I had for last episode. Did you have anything else?
No. No. I did not.
Okay.
I'm sorry that I'm not as thorough as you, Tori. I just have to get through it.
No, please do not apologize. I am not doing myself any favors by sitting here and obsessing about this stuff. And I wouldn't even say I'm obsessing. I'm just rolling it over in my brain because I can just think of so many better ways that they could have done so many parts of this show. And it just continues to baffle me why they've made these choices. And so I just go back and I'm like, okay, let me watch it again. What are they trying to say? What is this scene doing? What is the point of this? How does this bar scene get us to Dubai and this new interview? And I'm just not making those connections in any way. Like, it really feels like a throwaway flirt. It really feels like vampire science is maybe not going to be a thing, or if they decide to bring it in later, that's not really their grand plan now. They just wanted to use the name Fareed, so they did.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm very noncommittal because my brain has already, I'm already in the acceptance period. And well, I wouldn't even call it acceptance. I would call it, I'm rolling over and taking it kind of, you know, level of acceptance. Like, sure, why not? Who cares? And mentally, like I am already on like our next set of projects, because I've been texting Tori, like, we should read this book and this book, and we should watch this instead of this. So I am ready to leave AMC behind for at least another year.
Yeah, for sure.
But we have to get through this episode first. So let's do that.
All right.
So this is episode 7, The Thing Lay Still, which is from the quote found in Interview with the Vampire. The thing lay still, a great mass of wavy blonde hair, a coat, a pair of gleaming boots, and this horror that had been Lestat, and I staring helplessly at it. So we begin in Dubai. Daniel is opening up new folders on his desktop.
Yeah, and that dude needs to get a better labeling system. It stresses me out. Like, every time I look at it, it's just like recording session number whatever. Like, there's no... he needs to label things better. He needs to stop opening new folders on his desktop constantly. Someone needs to get in there and organize his files. I'm just saying.
Well, how would you label them?
Well, I would actually put, like, what the, you know... like, when we record, I put, like, what we're recording and that kind of thing. I don't just put a random number. Well, I'm sure it's not a random number, but I don't just put a number.
Well, I mean, it's just the folder. So their sessions are going in order. He might have like a Google Doc that inside each folder that kind of gives a summary. Might. I don't know. The numerical system makes sense to me, because Louis talks a lot. You know, it's kind of hard to put it all like in a folder title.
We can all be in one folder at least, instead of random files.
Okay. Great. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Even
okay.
If you're not going to label them, at least just put them in one spot. Anyway, it's fine. Every time I look at his desktop, I'm like, oh my God, my dude.
All right. So Rashid brings Louis blood soup and someone else brings Daniel dinner. Daniel stares at Rashid as he passes and then asks Louis if vampires can die. Louis tells him yes, as we flash back to Lestat swirling blood in a glass that slowly reveals a man tied to the table being bled as the three of them drink his blood from glasses. Also, I want to pause here and just be like, again, this is not how blood works. Blood congeals and coagulates so fucking quickly.
So. Yeah, I know. And like, and then like, there's the whole, they really keep making a point of mentioning the dead blood thing. So like, obviously this guy is still alive when they're pulling it out of him. But like, at what point does the blood become dead? Is it only if it comes out of a dead body? Like, none of that is clear.
Right. Right. Also, I do love the shady looks that Daniel is giving to Rashid. Like, he's like, if that is your real name.
No, he is like locked on to him now.
The actor is making great faces, I have to say. He's just like, So props to the actor whose name I've completely forgotten. I'm sorry.
Eric. But I can like see his last name in my head, but I cannot figure out.
Right.
Yeah, I can almost
Eric,
picture
I salute you. Those are some really good sus looking eyes that you're given, quote unquote, Rashid. All right. So Louis says that vampires can die by starvation, drinking the blood of the dead, decapitation, which really, I thought you had to decapitate after you just killed them.
Yeah, so, I'm not sure. I don't know that Louis is giving a real thorough list to Daniel over here, but.
Right. Yeah. Because I was like, I'm pretty sure that if you straight up decapitate a vampire, their head's just going to be right back on their head the next night. But if you, because like, they're not zombies, you know? So, but if like you burn them, you got to like scatter the ashes.
Right.
Speaking of which, and fire is true.
So. Yes.
So theoretically, it could be done, but could it be done to Lestat by Louis and Claudia? I think we're all pretty confident here that Claudia could absolutely 100% do it.
No doubts.
So Lestat was strong and in possession of powers that they didn't share. Also, Lestat had become paranoid, keeping Claudia and Louis close, demanding they all sleep in the same room again. Their only chance to plot was using the mind gift. So they spent their hours, quote, locked together in hatred. And this is one of like my six notes was saying that I hate that the writers gave Louis Claudia's line of locked together in hatred, because that's such a, it's a very poetic line. And Claudia is very poetic about her descriptive prose when it comes to describing like their predicament. So I'm not saying that, you know, Louis shouldn't have, you know, flowery text. He should, but I want to give the quotes due to the person who says them.
Yeah. I know later they say something else that I don't think I put in the recap. That was the line from the books, and they like all repeat it. And I'm just like, okay. Yep. We get it. You have a copy of Interview with the Vampire on your writer's table. Like, we understand that.
Highlighted.
I'm sure we get it.
Yeah, that's the let the flesh instruct the mind.
That's the one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, okay.
Understood. I'm like, oh, good. We're in a cult now.
Oh, man. Now I just thought of vampire cults and got sad. Anyway, a man approaches the flat and leaves a letter. Lestat hears him coming and they grab him, dragging him inside. The man says that people say they're devils, but he thinks they're angels. And Lestat grabs him and is like, does anyone else know you came here? And the man stupidly is like, no, I live alone. Nobody knows I'm here. You can murder me and no one will know where I went. Don't ever know. You've always told 10 people and like tagged yourself at the location on Facebook or something, if anyone ever asks.
Yeah, this is why you download the Foursquare app and check into every place.
Yeah, I don't actually use that because that's also dangerous for other reasons.
Yes. Right.
Anyway, the point is, Lestat realizes he can kill this guy with no problem, so he drinks from him briefly and then breaks his neck. He spits out the man's blood, complaining about the cancer in it, which is very let the right one in.
It is.
Yeah. Claudia reads the letter the man left, in which he says he's dying and was hoping for their secret. Lestat decides that letters will become pitchforks and they need to leave. They've already stayed at this location for too long. Louis says they had to make plans, and the architect of the plans was... And then at the interview in the present, Daniel fills in Claudia, cold, calculating. And again, he watches Rashid carefully as he clears Louis's plate, and Louis watches Daniel watch Rashid.
I love it. So as Louis Lestat and Claudia ride on a cable car, Louis uses the mind gift to ask Claudia the plan. She worries that he will inadvertently tip Lestat off if she gives him too much information. Lestat hears Louis's heartbeat. Louis insists to Claudia that he can pretend, but she tells him his job will be to distract Lestat. Back at the flat, Lestat plays the piano and Louis decorates a Christmas tree while they discuss where to go. Louis suggests Greece. Lestat retorts, ugh, sun worshippers, hot springs, those who must be kept. And Louis's like, what? What now? And Lestat's like, nothing. But he decides against Greece.
Yeah. Again, I don't... Anyway, it's fine. I don't know why they need to mention that. Also, like, I feel like Marius would kick his ass if he knew how bad he was at keeping secrets. Like,
oh, I know.
It's so bad. He's told them like pretty much everything. And then he just lets that slip just out of nowhere. And I'm like, my goodness. My goodness.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Especially with Claudia around. Like Louis, yeah, you could probably get away with like saying some things and he's just like, what? And but like with her around, she's going to write it down.
She's going to write it down. Latch onto code. It.
Yeah.
She'll write it down. She'll latch onto it. And then she'll start to appear
like knock, knock, knock. And Marius gets a knock on his door. Like one night. And he's just like, hi. She's like, let me in.
She's like, I asked around and I found you. And then Marius is really going to be pissed. So it's just not going to end well.
Yeah.
So Claudia comes in and notes that he's playing Bach again. Lestat says that Bach is beyond her, and she makes a quip about how it's the music of the master race and not made for mongrel ears. He tells her that she irritates him. Your very present irritates me, which again is more book dialogue. There's just like so much book dialogue in this episode.
I don't mind that.
I don't.
Is it mostly because it does come off very showy? Whereas in the movie, it didn't come off showy. It actually came off like an adaptation. Whereas in here, it's like, look, I have a book. I read it. See?
Yeah, I think it's because it does come off like we've got a copy of the book. You know, again, it's the same thing. It's just like we're using the book, but it's so different that it almost doesn't make sense. Like in the next line, he calls her sister, daughter, and infant death, mm-hmm. which makes zero sense. She does not look like a small child. Infant death does not apply to her in any way. And in fact, she has been dressing and passing as a young adult for like 20 years.
Right.
So like, it's just nonsensical. So it's like, why are you adding this stuff in that doesn't fit just mm-hmm. because it's from the book?
Right.
So I think that's why it bothers me.
Yeah. It's kind of like, the tone and the attitude that's behind it.
Yeah, because it would be fine if it, I mean, some of it's fine. Like saying you're her very presence irritates him. There's nothing wrong with that. It's fine. Obviously, if you're a fan of the books, you're going to clock that line. Or if you've seen the movie, you're going to clock that line and go, oh, I know that line. That's a Lestat line. Mm-hmm. But some of it just feels very like shoehorned in.
Yes. Yes.
Claudia has brought Lestat sheet music from a French composer and they play together. Claudia tells him that she has an idea. Before they leave, they should settle their affairs, and then on their last night, they should throw a giant party. Claudia says the dead man's letter proves that people want to know their secret, and they'll come out of sheer curiosity. But Lestat says it's not a good idea.
Later, we see Lestat, Louis, and Claudia sit in a theater and watch newsreels of Hitler.
I hate it so much. I hate stuff set in World War II anyway. But, like, I don't want to see Hitler in my vampire show. I'm sorry, I just don't.
Mm-hmm. And Lestat asks about her party idea. She says they can invite a choice few back to their house for a feast to remember. A man keeps shushing them, and Lestat uses his mind powers to make the man slap himself silly. Which
is hilarious and just such a dick move. Like, it's just such a petty, petty dick move.
Mm-hmm. Then it's the new year, and the trio stand on their balcony overlooking the ruckus in the streets. Louis mentally tells Claudia that if she keeps pushing the party idea, Lestat will be on to her. Claudia wants him to be suspicious. Out loud, she mentions Mardi Gras is early this year. She mentally tells Louis to say it's ridiculous, and he does, saying they plan Mardi Gras balls a year out. But Claudia points out, with the costumes and chaos, it's the best night. Lestat says it's not worth the risk. But if they starved themselves for a few nights prior, the hunger would be transcendent. Claudia jumps off the balcony after a woman to follow and eat, which thankfully everyone around them is super drunk, so they don't even notice.
They don't notice. So Louis Lestat and Claudia then visit Tom Anderson and tell him that they're leaving town. He doesn't even know why he should care. They haven't spoken to him in years. And he has like this old photo of them together and notes that they haven't aged a day. So he knows something is suspicious. They tell him that before they leave, they want to throw a large Mardi Gras party. They know Anderson is on the committee of Raj and Lestat wants to be Raj. Anderson argues that these things are planned years in advance and the committee is supposed to be secret. So they're not supposed to know who's on it. Claudia hands him a sheet of paper at one point. I didn't like pause to see what it was, but I think it's like the names of the people on the committee maybe or something.
Yes.
To say that they like know. Yeah. So then they ask him for a price. Like, you know, what can we pay you to get this to work? Then they mention they know his business now involves shipping coffins overseas and he recently lost a boat. So what if they were to replace that ship for him? And he basically agrees.
The crew of Raj had been 3 years into planning, but abandoned it within a week once they got their bribes. We see Lestat get the invitation to be Raj and looking over sketches of their costumes and the float. Rumors about the weird brothers and their sister made the event a really hot ticket. Also, Lestat has booked tickets on a ship to Rio. They plan to get trunks that fit their coffins with locks that trigger from the inside. Mm-hmm. They're making their plans.
Yep. Back in the present, Daniel comments on how, in this plan, they seduce the seducer. He looks over newspaper reports and death certificates from this party night, apparently. Rashid, meanwhile, is talking on the phone and standing very openly in the sunlight, which Daniel can't stop staring at. So now he's really confused. He's trying to work this out in his head. And we are all with you, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Back at the flat, Louis Lestat and Claudia make their plans. They will fast for 3 nights. At the ball, they'll pick their victims and invite them back to the flat to learn the secrets of eternal youth. They'll pin Amaranth to them to mark them. And once back at the flat, they'll bolt the doors, shutter the windows, and feast.
Daniel asks how they plan to kill Lestat. Claudia walks into an apothecary and buys poison. Louis says Claudia wouldn't tell him at first, but the plan was to poison the victim with laudanum and arsenic and make them appear just really drunk. Cut to Lestat on the float, dressed in flamboyant Rococo fashion. He bites a fake baby that he pulled from a cake, kind of imitating the king cake that they do in Nola, and red streamers squirt out of the baby. Louis says Lestat's poor taste on the float drove away most of the crew of Raj, but there was plenty of bait to choose from. And we just have to pause and give major props to the costume designer, because Louis Lestat and Claudia are all dressed in Rococo era chic, and mm-hmm. they look absolutely stunning. I love Claudia's outfit. I would wear that in a heartbeat.
She looks so good, but they all look really good. I think they all look awesome. The costumes in the scene are pretty great.
Mm-hmm. They go around and choose their victims, giving them the boutonnieres of Amaranth. Claudia introduces Lestat to twins who smell like rosemary, and he's clearly taken with them.
Yeah. So Louis says the lack of blood for 3 nights meant that he wasn't thinking clearly, but he could tell something was off, and it maybe if he had been thinking clearly, he would have been able to put it together. He hears a voice in his head say, "You miserable dogs." He thinks it was Claudia, so he's like, "Wait, what did you say about dogs?" And she's like, "That wasn't me. I guessed right here that it was Antoinette, so I'm just mm-hmm. going to throw that out there. I don't think that it's that hard to figure out, but..."
I mean, I have to have subtitles on, so it says Antoinette.
Oh, does it? That's yeah. hilarious. Anderson whispers something about Louis, like he's like Mr. Dulac or something. And Louis hears him, and then Anderson comes up to him and tells him that the architect who built this place also built the U.S. Capitol, which has like its famous little like whispering nook or whatever. And he calls this the Whispering Gallery, where you can hear sniping from across the room. Although the fact that Louis heard him over the band has to be one of the tricks that his little feg pederast satanic trio knows, which, okay, well. Then Louis gives him a flower, which I think now is very well deserved due to that comment.
Yeah. Louis finds Lestat on a veranda, his wig discarded. They smoke cigarettes together, and Lestat talks about how he'll miss New Orleans. Then he asks Louis for a dance before they leave. Louis says there were countless articles written about this night, but all of them left out their dance and kiss because it was too scandalous to be gay amongst all the blood and murder.
Yeah. They'll write about the slaughter, but not the gay kissing.
No. As they dance, Louis says he was trying to distract Lestat, but instead fell again for him, which thank God Claudia was in charge of the planning. Because she definitely pegged him for a sucker.
Yeah.
Louis gets cold feet for the plan, and Claudia cuts in, telling him it's too late. She's poisoned one of the twins, and he'll be dead on his feet within an hour.
So back at the flat, their chosen victims stand around, and Lestat tells them a story about a magical book that someone found and managed to use it to concoct an elixir of immortality. He says the elixir is in the covered punch bowl in front of them on the table. And then each of them state their birth year and ages. Claudia is 36, Louis is 61, and Lestat is 180 years old. He also says he was turned into a vampire in 1794 at the mm-hmm. age of 34, which obviously is different from the book. So mm-hmm. I just thought that was interesting. That would have been 3 years after he turned Louis in the books.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting timeline. I believe that's the year Claudia was made into a yes. vampire. Okay. Just some interesting new math there. So, Anderson pulls the lid off the punch bowl, but it's empty. And then the vampires attack, and we get one of the goriest blood-drinking massacres on screen. They tear the flesh from the victims and, like, spit it out of their mouths. At one point, Louis rips a man's jaw off his face, and his face is just this gaping, bleeding hole. They have blood all over themselves. They are the messiest vampire eaters I have ever seen in my life.
All over their nice white clothes.
I know. Some of the victims try to escape, but the doors and windows are locked and bolted, so it is useless.
Upstairs, Claudia and Louis find the twins. One of them pukes violently. Lestat joins them. They've killed one twin, but saved the other for Lestat. He pokes the artery in the neck and says the blood smells of rosemary and something else. Lestat asks the stranger what else is in the blood. Antoinette, now a vampire, enters and says laudanum and arsenic. Lestat reveals she was at the ball listening in on their thoughts. She grabs Claudia and forces her into the drugged blood. Lestat grabs Louis and says Antoinette will be much more agreeable to their life together.
But then Lestat suddenly gets sick and vomits blood. He has to let Louis go, and he sits on the ground and starts choking. Claudia hits Antoinette, pushing her away, and grabs a poker from the fireplace. She stabs her through the chest, pinning her to the ground. Claudia tells Lestat that she's not an idiot. She knows Antoinette has been watching them. And then we see scenes of them on the cable car and, like, talking on the balcony and Claudia buying the drugs. And in all those places, we see Antoinette is there watching. She's even there watching when Claudia is about to leave for the train, which might be how Lestat knew that she was leaving for the train. I actually went back and watched it the second time to see if you could see her. Not the scene from episode 6, but the other ones in this episode to see if you could, like, see her on the cable car or anything. I couldn't see her at all. So I was just curious if they threw that in there so you could maybe catch it if you were eagle-eyed, but I did not actually see her in any of those places.
Right.
Claudia tells Lestat that he should have let the train go. She poisoned Anderson, knowing Lestat wouldn't be able to resist killing him. And then she tells Louis to have his goodbye. She beats Antoinette unconscious. I just think it's funny. She, like, stops to, like, beat her unconscious, and then she leaves. Louis takes his little sword out of his cane thing and sits behind Lestat, and he kind of holds him, and Lestat tells him that he's loved him and he's glad it's him, and Louis slits his throat. As he's dying, Claudia comes back to record his last words, which she writes in his own blood. And his last words are, "Put me in my coffin, Louis." Louis stares at the body and he repeats the lines from the book from which they took the episode title that we said at the beginning.
Once upon a time, a trio of bards, the narrators three, were called upon to unite the realms with an episode-by-episode deep-dive commentary on the fairytale-laden soap opera, Once Upon a Time.
Tune in for weekly retrospect sprinkled with judgmental fondness and hysterical disappointment as the narrators three laugh, throw shade, and have the occasional emotional breakdown.
If you find tales of costuming, character takedowns, and plot devices that come with a price utterly charming, the Narrators 3 invite you to join them for Once Upon a Rewatch, available on all major platforms where podcasts can be found.
Louis then tells Daniel that there was no point in lingering. They burned the bodies in the incinerator, including Antoinette, who comes to just in time to be burned alive and screams as she dies. Claudia says they should burn Lestat, but Louis can't bring himself to do it. They wrapped him in a carpet, threw him in a trunk, and left him on the curb with the trash. Then
there's a metaphor there. I don't know.
Then they got in the car and headed for the boat, the one they bought Anderson, that had a shipload of coffins for cargo. They were ready to begin the adventure of their lives.
Yeah. So it all ended happily ever after, I guess. I don't know. Which, in the present, Daniel says something similar. He says, "Isn't that neat and tidy?" He points out that in Claudia's diary, she seems to despise Louis during this journey and their travels. He notes that more pages are torn out of her diary, but from what he can read, Daniel feels like she hated Louis's guts. Louis argues, saying he was haunted by Paul's death and the murder, and that's maybe why she was acting that way or thinking that he didn't care about her. But Daniel goes, What murder? It was an act of mercy. Louis's confused. Daniel points out that the trash will be taken to a landfill, which will be full of rats. And they left Lestat in a trunk that could be opened from the inside. He didn't kill Lestat. He saved his life. Louis, flustered, gets up and walks away. And as he walks, he remembers Claudia insisting they burn the body. He remembers grabbing Claudia by the throat and stopping her from doing that. Daniel follows him, saying that he chose Lestat over her over and over again. He needs a therapist instead of paying someone to listen to him. Rashid says that he's only heard half the story, and when he hears the whole thing, he'll be ashamed of how he's acting now. Louis tells Rashid to stop. Daniel insists that this is the same shit that happened in San Francisco. It's not an honest reckoning. Rashid flies up into the air. He says this time he won't save Daniel's life like he did in 1973. He says that he protects Louis from himself. Daniel doesn't remember Rashid being there in 1973. I mean, obviously he remembers him in the bar. He doesn't remember him saving his life.
Mm-hmm.
Rashid, while flying, grabs a book from one of the top shelves. Daniel is confused. He's flying, but he's like, I saw you in the sunlight. Rashid says that as they age, the sun loses its power over them. He drops the book, which is a scrapbook of playbills and articles about Le Théâtre des Vampires. Louis says, Daniel, meet the vampire Armand, the love of my life. And they stand together, and Daniel has no idea who the fuck Armand is or why it matters, making this the most pointless television reveal since we learned that the mother was dead on How I Met Your Mother, which I'm still very angry about.
I can't watch that ending without sobbing hysterically.
I hated that choice so much, and like I feel like it kind of ruined the whole show for me. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the things that I, to this day, am actively angry that they did. And this ending is equally stupid. It's completely pointless.
This one's just stupid. Yeah.
It's stupid. It's like Daniel doesn't know who Armand is. The last interview ended before Armand ever came up. He doesn't have any idea. He barely saw Rashid in the bar. He clearly doesn't remember him saving his life in that room in San Francisco. But like, even if he did, his name probably didn't come up at any point. So this is solely for the audience. But if you're only watching the TV show, you don't know who Armand is either. So it doesn't matter. So like, what is the point? I just don't know. And like, it's so funny to me that so many people guess this right off the bat. If you go back and listen to our pilot episode, I was like, this probably isn't true. But I was thinking maybe this guy is Armand, but they probably wouldn't do that. And like, no, they did that.
Yeah.
They did that. So Rashid is Armand. And that is how the episode ends. End of season one.
Thank Christ.
Yeah, I know. My goodness. My goodness.
This episode, it was just, you know, the same old shit for me. So I was like, oh, I'm not surprised at any of this. So nothing like swept me off my feet or took me by surprise. And I watched the little like behind the scenes, you know, like fireside chat with Roland Jones,
you know, after.
And like, I really, really, really detested like the smarmy way he was like thinking that he pulled a gotcha on us. Like, not just really with Armand, but with the old switcheroo of the where the laudanum actually was. Because he's like, you know, you see the twins. It's like, oh, here are the boys. Like, yo, he's going to eat him and he's going to get poisoned. But then, and I'm just like, yeah, I don't care, dude. Like, I figured somebody's going to be poisoned. So it didn't matter who it was. So I was just like, yeah, you really fooled me there, dude. Good for you.
This episode is so full of like, we think we're so clever. Like, you have them bring Antoinette back, which even if you haven't read the books and you don't know that Lestat turns his musician friend, like that's an obvious thing that's going to happen. Like, it feels very obvious. It was so obvious that I thought it had already happened. That's how obvious it was.
Right. I was like, oh, I guess she wasn't a vampire. All right, whatever. Who gives a shit?
Yeah. And then you have her listening in the whole time. But like, if you go back to the scenes, like, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I looked and I couldn't see her anywhere. Like when Claudia jumps off the balcony, I was looking to see if maybe she was like, if maybe Claudia walked past her. I looked on the cable car and it looked like the seat in front of Lestat was empty. So I'm just like, if you're gonna try and pull that kind of clever crap, you have to have it in there so the audience can see it and maybe catch on to it before the reveal. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they didn't do that just tells me that it wasn't that big of a reveal. And then you have, obviously, the Armand reveal, which everyone has known for weeks now. Like, that is not a secret. Everyone was guessing that that was probably the case. You have, what was the other one? You have the switcheroo with the drugs, which we know Claudia is going to have a plan. Like, just so much of it was just like, oh, look. Look how clever we are. And it's like, no, but I mean, and it's fine. Like the thing with twists and the one of the things I hate about like the whole Marvel movie complex of like, we're going to surprise you is that like a really good twist should be something you can predict and see coming if you know the signs. So that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, this just, this definitely has an air of like, ha, we got you. But who did you get? You got the book fans, because the book fans are the only ones who would have guessed this. The book fans are the only ones who even know who the hell the vampire Armand is. Like,
right.
If you're just watching the show, you may know him from the movie as Antonio Banderas. If you watch What We Do in the Shadows, you may know like Antonio Banderas Armand from Guillermo. Like, mm-hmm. That's about it. But it's not like a huge reveal, because that doesn't mean anything to you. And it doesn't mean anything to this Daniel, who doesn't know who the hell Armand is. They could have been calling him Armand the whole time. It wouldn't have made a difference to this guy, because he doesn't know who that's supposed to be. He's never heard of the Theater of the Vampires. That is not something this Daniel knows about.
No.
So it's just very weird. My other big quibble is just the whole sunlight thing. Like,
oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, you turn a certain age and the sun just stops being a problem. Are they not vampires? And then, yeah, if it stops being a problem, then like, okay, but like, why? Why is that stopping? It's just so stupid. It makes me angry. It makes me angry. So I think that's really dumb. And I think the only reason they did that is because they wanted to put Rashid in the sunlight a couple times so people would be like, oh, see, he's not a vampire. He can't be a vampire. Everyone who's guessing that he's a vampire because he said electronic mailbox or whatever is wrong. And then, no, it's just that we've changed the basic lore of vampires so that we could surprise you, I guess.
Yeah. The fact that there's like no actual reason behind it. Like, if that had been the lore from the very beginning, let's just say for argument's sake, okay, yeah, sure, right? But like, because it wasn't, it does seem like they just changed it for the sake of gotcha, you know? And I'm like, that's a dumb fucking reason to like completely turn over vampire lore.
Yeah, and it's pretty basic vampire lore. Like, it's not just Ricean vampire lore. That's a pretty big tenet of a lot of vampire stuff. I mean, I realize that's not always the case, but yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah, see? Yeah, okay, whatever. Whatever, okay. Man.
Then there's that thing that Roland Jones said about how, like, fans of Armand and Daniel don't have to worry. Or maybe it wasn't him. It was someone at one of the panels. Someone had asked, like, you know, if you're changing the reporter guy, like, doesn't he have a relationship with Armand? What about fans of that? And he's like, oh, no, we have a plan. You don't have to worry. So I guess
I am worried. I am nothing but worried.
I guess the plan is that he saved Daniel from Louis in the 70s. But then Daniel still went off and got married and had kids and was like a straight guy or a closeted guy for his whole life while he was having some normal journalism career and was in no way affected by this meeting. So I'm like, that's not their story. So thanks, I guess.
Thanks for not shitting on their story even further by actually doing it injustice and trying to shoehorn it in with whatever the fuck this is.
I mean, they still might, and that scares me, to be honest, but I don't know how. I don't know how.
I don't know either.
I don't know how they're I don't know. I don't know.
Well, here we go. Here. Wild ideas for season 2, right? Okay, here. It was all a dream. Vampire Daniel is actually in a coma, and they're trying to retell the story from the beginning to get him to wake up. And then we hear the sound of a little choo-choo train. And then that's when he opens his eyes, and our real Daniel is there. And he was like, oh my gosh, what's been going on? He's all disorientated. And Armand is there to hold him and say, it's okay. It was all a nightmare. You've been in a coma. In a vampiric coma.
You've been in a vampiric coma in Marius's house this whole time.
Or this is them on the plane and, you know, going to the Lestat concert.
No, let's not even ruin that moment, because that moment is amazing. Let's just leave that out.
Hey, man, you said wild theories. There you go.
I did. That is a wild, wild theory.
Right.
Before we get to season two, I mean, other than that, obviously, we can come back if there are any more. Do you have any main takeaways from this season? What did you like? What did you hate?
What did I like? I think we've discussed ad nauseum of what I hated. What I like is, for the most part, the cast.
Yeah, the cast is killing it. They're doing the best they can with what they're given.
Exactly. Like, it's all the accoutrement around the show, you know, like the costumes, the set design, like the production design, you know, all of those things, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Killing it, slaying. I liked that we got a little more time with Louis's family in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So we could really like feel for that. I'm drawing a blank at what else I like. So I'm
sure.
I'm just going to say that it ends there, or I can't think of nothing jumps out anyway at me that like I absolutely adored. Because all the things that I didn't like about this show are fairly overwhelmingly egregious. Like, okay, I do like the fact that, you know, they were initially tackling the complexities of being a Black queer man. But like, as soon as they brought like, you know, severe power imbalance and domestic violence into it, and I do understand, like, we had someone who commented and said that they, as a person of color, glad that they actually like addressed the issue and showed it for like the ugly thing it is, which I totally respect that. I just don't feel like that's what this story is about. And it's not going to be able to do that kind of commentary justice.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Like, I do like the little things they say about how like, oh, they would write about the gory murder and the mystery, but they wouldn't write about the queer people kissing. So I think that's good. But yeah. Then they also have so far erased one of the major queer couples in the series, and I don't know that that's ever going to be a thing. So,
right.
Kind of like a little bit of one, less of the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they handled the racing really well in episode 3.
Yeah.
But I don't know that they've continued that at all. And I'm not an expert on that topic. But same. Just from my casual viewing, I don't feel like that has been addressed further. So do you have any big questions hanging out at the end of the season that you wish season 1 had answered? They may answer in season 2, but like, is there anything you feel like should have been addressed before we end the season?
As in, like, within the context of the story?
Yes, like in the show itself.
In the show itself. Okay.
Because obviously.
Right. No, because if I could like sit down and be like, why did you feel the need to do all this and yet not do this, you know? No, I remember there being kind of a few contradictories, but like they were so like, oh, whatever, you know, that like, I don't feel they, you know, they need to like address them, like the blood and drinking out of, you know, goblets and shit like that. Like, you know, just stupid little shit like that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's annoying, but you're right. It doesn't need, like, it's fine. We can just hand wave it. It's fine.
Yeah. But otherwise, no.
Okay.
I mean, I would have liked to have seen Claudia in the wild a lot more and not just like the really shitty, horrific moment that she had.
Mm-hmm. I would have liked to see her in the wild, and I would have liked them to really stick with the whole she's 14, it's a problem story, if they yes. were going to do that. Because I feel like they had that for like a hot minute, and then they literally dropped it because it wasn't a problem. Like when she was trying to convince Louis to go to Europe with her, that wasn't even part of her argument. And she's appealing to him. And if you're appealing that much, like, if it's an issue, why isn't that the core of your argument? I look like I'm 14, Louis. I need an adult. Like, that should be the right. crux of her argument.
Which then leads me to believe that Madeline will not be in season two.
Probably not. Probably not. Unless, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. It's just very odd. So the things I loved are like you. I really liked the costumes. I really liked the cast. I thought the cast did a really great job. There are moments where Jacob Anderson, you can just tell, is just like really portraying his suffering or his conflict.
Oh, yeah.
Internal conflict. I feel like Sam Reed really does embody Lestat. And I wish that the writing was kinder to this Lestat. Me too. Because I want to root for him, and I think Sam Reed wants to root for him, and I think he's doing an excellent job, and I just am sad that with the writing that he's given, because I feel like it could have been so much better.
Yeah.
Bailey's same. Great. Even Eric, who plays Daniel, I can't remember his name because I'm the worst, but he does do a really good job with what he's given. He's got that sarcastic attitude. Like, I just wish that they had gone a different route, not because he's a bad actor, but because I just wish that this was closer to the books.
Yeah, but same.
That
same.
Said, like, he does do fine. I believe his character is the only motivation that I completely understand in the show. Like, I understand mm-hmm. why he's there. I understand what he's doing. I understand even why he's trying to poke holes in Louis's story, because he's frustrated because Louis is just constantly spouting bullshit.
Yeah.
It's like, what? No. Like, I've heard the tapes of our previous interview. I know what you said. I thought this was supposed to be a whole new thing, and you're still pulling some crap on me.
Right. Yeah. I have similar feelings. Like, I agree with you completely. Like, if this is the story that they're going to go with, Daniel's doing great. And right. I agree. I'm like, yeah, man, get in there. Fucking 2020. 48 hours his ass, like Walter Cronkite him, man. Like, get
Edward R. Murrow that bitch. Just yeah. do it.
Just do it. Get in there and make that bitch squirm. Yeah. So, I mean, sorry, you know me. I love Armand. So it didn't surprise me that he's like being fucky. Like, no.
That's fine, and he's obviously not going to be Book Armand, but again, Book Armand fucking with people is not totally out of character either. Mm-hmm. It's not like ridiculous. It's just, yeah, I don't know,
but I'm just like, oh my god, if you're gonna make him nearly omnipotent with being able to walk in the sun as well as float, I'm just like, what the hell else are you going to do to the ones who are more powerful than him?
Yeah, well, they got to have people who can fight against the vampire war that's coming. I don't
that's
know.
That's allegedly coming. Yeah, I want to.
That's another thing. So I'm not there yet. All right. Things I hate about the way they did this, other than just like, I mean, I feel like that scene in Supernatural where Crowley pulls out the contract and it's just like a roll of paper that just goes on forever. Yeah, there's a lot of changes in here that I'm not a huge fan of. But taking the show on its own and not related to the books, which I am trying to do, it is a challenge because, as I've said before, I have the books in my head. It's very hard to separate them. But if you take that away and I'm not really worried about the changes necessarily, I hate the vampire lore of this show. I really don't like it. Like, I don't like the whole vampires can be awake during the day. Mm-hmm. Them being able to have sex is fine. It's a vampire TV show. I get it, but it's not my favorite thing. I hate the sunlight thing. The sunlight thing is so stupid. And just, I don't know. It just feels so opposite of like the Ricean lore. One of the things I really love about vampire stories, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, is just how every vampire story has its own lore and rules. And I find that stuff really, really fascinating.
Yeah.
And this just feels like it took the Rycian lore and kind of neutered it and then just didn't add anything cool. And so I'm just like, okay, sure.
Yeah. And they did it to service their own, again, twists and turns and gotcha moments. It does nothing to actually serve the story or serve the plot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if this is going to pay off in some way and service the whole story, I can forgive it, but I cannot conceive of any which way that they will, you know, shake it, that this is going to be justified.
Yeah, I don't really see it paying off either. And it also just creates more narrative problems if you have these vampires who are like super, super powerful that they can't even be hurt by the sun.
Right. Although I'm just like, I'm like, okay, well, they're going to be crazy omnipotent because what's to stop them from, yeah, like ruling over Earth or whatever.
Yeah. And honestly, like, as I think about the Vampire Chronicles, I don't think of the sun being a massive problem in like terms of danger, because they're usually able to get out of the sun pretty easily.
Yeah.
It's more the whole like, it's not drama. What's the word?
The loss of like the symbolism of like God's light on them.
Well, no, yeah. I don't care about God's light.
All right. Well, that's how a lot of them see it. So
I'm a heretic. No, I think it's just the loss of being able to see that sun. Like it's the sacrifice to be immortal, right? Like you have to lose something. And the point of vampires, they lose the ability to be fully human because they have to feed on other humans and they can't walk in the sunlight or see the sun. And I don't know, I feel like you take that away, you kind of lose something somewhere along the line.
I mean, removing the religious connotations, the sun is also just represents life.
Yes.
And they are not alive. They're dead for all intents and purposes. So they've created these vampires, which are more aligned with almost like those vampires that are kind of like borderline sci-fi fantasy, where, you know, they're like an actual race that is born and, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
like they, in which case things like walking in the sun may not be like that big of a deal. But this is like an exchange, a dark gift, or losing the sun is part and parcel.
Yeah.
So I just feel like they didn't think that one through.
Yeah. I don't love that very much. And I don't know, maybe it'll pay off. I mean, we know like Lestat can't really be destroyed by the sun by like book four. So I guess it's not the end of the world. It's just one of those things where you're like, okay, I get it. You thought you got everyone because Rashid was in the sunlight. And now we realize that it doesn't matter.
It could have been just an illusion. Like that would have been hilarious if it had just been like a fucking simple magic trick that he looked up on YouTube. You know what I'm saying? Like to me, that would have been amazing. Like, oh, sleight of the eye, my friend. I stepped in it for like a minute, like not even a minute. Like it's going to take me a little bit to burn up, you know?
Oh, but I just realized, now they can't kill him if they get to Memnock the Temple.
Yeah, I did think of that.
I was like, well, I guess he can't
molt himself then.
I don't know that they're going to get there. And honestly, I don't know that they have any interest in telling that story in any way. So I don't know if that would even become a thing if they were able to get that far. But that is a thing they could no longer do. And I wish the writing had been more consistent and had shown us more of what was going on in Louis's head, or what he and Lestat love about each other, or why he was feeling like he had to meet the sun after Claudia left, beyond just his narration. I feel like the show told us a lot of things, but did not show them very well. I also still feel like I don't know what story the show is trying to tell. And by the end of season one, I feel like I should have a better grasp on that. In terms of questions I still have, I want to know more about this great conversion that's supposedly coming. Like, I feel like they dropped that and then just like left it. And then Daniel mentioned flying vampire apocalypse and then again, left it. So I just want to know more about what the hell that's about.
Right.
I also still want to know why there's a second interview. Like, why is this happening now? What is Louis's motivation? I barely get his motivation for the first interview, other than maybe he thought Daniel was hot and just wanted to sleep with this guy. I don't get his motivation now at all. So what is the point?
Right. I don't get it either.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, especially because, like, now we know for sure he's not isolated and alone. He is with Armand. And I guess the Dubai Tower is their stand-in for Trinity Gate or whatever. So possibly there are other vampires looking in the tower or something. I don't know. Maybe Fareed lives there. Who knows? He lives on floor three.
They do have a farm.
I want to know about the farm.
I don't. My God. Please step back from this. Please pedal back. Please, in fact, please pedal back from half the shit that we're complaining about. Like, if they just pedal back from that in season two, I will not tease them about it. I'll be like, yes, this is a good choice. Yes. Yes. Keep going. Good boy. You know?
Yeah. And yeah. I also want to know, and this is not season one, they could not have answered this yet, but I do want to know how they're going to try and rehabilitate Lestat. And from what Roland Jones was saying at the end, the after episode segment on episode 7, I don't know. I feel like he kind of hinted at that maybe Louis isn't sure what's going on or isn't what's sure what's true, or maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, so it's, and the way that Louis was kind of coming unraveled at the end.
Yeah.
And Armand stepped out. I was like, is Armand fucking with him? Is Armand giving him false memories?
God, I hope not. I really hope not.
I just thought of that. Oh my God. I think he is.
I really hope that's not so where they're going, because that would be incredibly disappointing. And I don't know. Like, Armand does lie to Louis at the end of Interview with the Vampire and tell him that Lestat is dead, and then later reveals that that is not true. So if that's what he's referring to, and maybe Louis thinks Lestat is dead at this point and Daniel is like poking holes in that story. And so like, he's like, oh wait, maybe Lestat's not dead. The other thing they changed majorly in this episode, which we didn't mention, is just that like Louis has such an active role in killing Lestat, which he does not have in the books.
Right.
And so that's an interesting change on the original story. And then it's interesting again, because he had such an active role in killing him, but is also the one who prevented them from throwing him in the incinerator and making sure it was done.
I do like that their budget did not allow for a total inferno.
Yeah, although I kind of like the inferno. I don't know. I
like the inferno, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm pretty sure it was budgetary reasons. They're like, can we burn down these buildings? Absolutely not. So, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, they were filming on location, so I can see.
Well, I think they built a set on location, though. I'm pretty sure they built a set in, like, Louisiana. So they could have burned those buildings, but yeah. I don't know. I mean, I love my Pyro Louie. And he has the fire gift, so he literally could have just set him on fire. Although, who knows when he got the fire gift? Maybe he didn't have it at that time. Or maybe he had it and, like, Marius just literally didn't know until he thought about burning something and it happened, which is the most hilarious way to learn you have a power. I still freaking love that. I think that's amazing.
God, what if you accidentally like burn somebody you didn't mean to? You're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
I think you have to really mean it.
Oh, okay, good. Burning random pizza boys or something. I know. I'm like, no, oops. Just a little crispy. It's still good. It's still good.
So, theories for season two.
I now theorize that Armand is pulling some sort of fuckery.
Okay.
I'm not sure now that Claudia is making it out alive.
Okay.
I'd love that. You know that.
I want that.
I want it to be true so bad.
Yeah.
But I can't allow my heart to believe it.
I still believe it 100%. Okay. I'm convinced, because I don't know. I mean, there are arguments to be made, because it does sound like she has a beef with Louis, and this Armand seems very protective of Louis, which is fine. I'm trying to figure out. Because she can go off on her own, I don't think they need to kill her off, and so I don't think they're going to.
Mm-hmm.
That's my theory on that. But I don't know. We'll see. Again, we don't have any idea what's going to happen. My other theories... Just trying to think of what happens in the rest of the book that they're going to need to deal with if they decide to deal with it, which, again, they don't have to. They've made that very clear.
I think they're really going to extrapolate on maybe them going to Eastern Europe.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a longer section of them finding, like, maybe revenant vampires or maybe finding actual vampires. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Claudia will meet a nice vampire boy and run off and be gone before they even get to the theater. Who knows? Yeah, I am going to guess that the reason Armand is with Louis is the same as the books, in that they left after the whole theater fiasco. I think Louis thinks Claudia is dead.
Mm.
I don't know that she is. That's going to be my prediction. I think Louis believes Claudia is dead. I think Armand knows that she's not.
Okay. Okay.
So that's my guess. But again, we'll see. And a wild stab in the dark, right? And that was my, Rashid was a wild stab in the dark too. And check that out. So who knows? Maybe it'll pay off. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't get like lotto money for these coming true or anything.
Especially right now here in California. Good Lord.
All right. So I guess that wraps up AMC Interview with the Vampires season one.
Huzzah.
We had a lot of thoughts and feelings. I don't know if you have anything else.
You know, I do. I feel like I waited most of my life for this, right? Mm-hmm. And when the golden age of television really started kicking off with like the early seasons of Game of Thrones and, you know, even going back to like The Sopranos and The Wire and such, right? But like, you know, fantasy and sci-fi really started getting the budget they deserved. And then horror anthologies. I was really, really, really hoping that someone who truly, truly loved this series would bring it to fruition on the small screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the feeling that I'm dealing with most with this adaptation is just disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. I know another one will not happen in my lifetime. And so it bums me out really bad, you know, because I had to sit through the god awfulness that was the Queen of the Damned movie. And
I mean, Akasha was awesome in that. I don't know that anything else was, but
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everybody else was horrific.
So bad. And there was that billboard of Lestat's crotch that he and Marius just kept sitting on. And I'm like, what is this movie? Why does Jesse have Sailor Moon hair? Why is this happening? Yeah, no, I feel your pain there. And you know, I don't know that it won't be within our lifetime. We're young and spry, 40. In another,
we're going to be like 80 and I'm going to be like, gather round, children. We're watching the vampire show. Mom,
listen,
Meemaw, we don't want to watch the vampire show from like 100 years ago, from 100-year-old books. Shut up and watch them.
Listen, rights don't last forever. Who knows how many seasons the show will get? Obviously, it's already got season two. It may get a season three. I will be clear here. I'm not actively rooting against this show, but like you, I'm just really disappointed. Like, I've always wanted Daniel and Armand on the screen. I've always thought that would be super cool to get that Devil's Minion story adapted in some way in a movie or in a TV show, just because it's so fun. And it's like, there's so many fun little moments. You could literally make a whole movie of that. There could be like two episodes that span that story, or three, or you could do a season on it. I mean, it's so much. And it's just sad that, like, whatever we're going to get, it's not going to be that. But then, in addition to just not getting that, they've made so many changes that just, like, domino out and knock other things over and make it really hard for them to tell any part of the rest of the story with any coherency, except you can still flash back to Vampire Lestat and most of that stuff can happen. But everything else is going to be vastly different. And so, and I don't know that I believe that anything they do with TVL is going to be the same either. Like, I don't know that they will do anything similar to the books, because they definitely And I've said this a couple times, I'm sure people are probably tired of me saying it, but the feeling I get from the showrunner and from the show is very much that they want to pull the rug out from under people who know the books and make sure that they're doing stuff that's shocking and different. And they've got a new twist on it that's better. It's better than the books. And so, you know, with that feeling, I feel like this season really did kind of embody that. This episode especially kind of embodied that with the whole Armand reveal. I don't know that I trust them to do anything similar to the books. That doesn't mean it won't be a fun, campy vampire show. Doesn't mean you can't love it. Doesn't mean they won't find a way to get Louis and Lestat together and have their fun. And Louis and Armand being together obviously does not preclude Louis and Lestat being together. It doesn't preclude Daniel and Armand getting together at this point. Although I mean, I'm not against that. I just don't know that that's where they're going to go. I don't know. I feel like it's just like you. I'm just sad that we're not getting an adaptation that is closer to the books.
Wasn't Brian Fuller initially?
He was. Well, they shopped it around. He originally was attached to one iteration of the show, and then that fell apart for some reason.
That really bums me out, because I feel like Brian Fuller would have done the first season, because we all know that he does usually peace out by the second one, but he at least would have set up a really good foundation.
Yeah, I think he would have done a really good job. I'll be honest, I'm not a big fan of Hannibal, but...
I'm not a fan of Hannibal at all, but like, he set up a good foundation for Star Trek Discovery. He set up a good foundation with like other shows.
Well, and he did Pushing Daisies, which has that morbid sense of humor that I think would work really well with this series while still being able to stick closer to the books. He did Dead Like Me, again, very similar. He's very interested in the themes of like death and life after death. And also
he's a raging Anne Rice fan.
And he just, I mean, he did the whole like Chuck and Ned thing with two people who like couldn't even touch and had this whole romance. And so I feel like he could have done amazing stuff with these characters. So that is a bummer.
Yeah. What could have been? All right.
Yeah. Well,
but yeah, that was my final thought.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't disagree with you. I'm in the same boat. And I think a lot of people are. And it's not that like I expected them to stick very close. You know, like it's an adaptation. I understand you have to make changes just logistically.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't have a problem with making changes because you have a way to make them interesting. But I feel like they just straight up were like, let's just change everything. And some of it had a reason and some of it was just because that's what they felt like doing. And it's what it is. I just wish the adaptation was in the hands of someone who really loves the books and wanted to tell those stories rather than try to make it better and do their own thing.
On that note.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us for our discussion / whining / sobbing in the corner about AMC's Interview with the Vampire show. Hey, I haven't cried on the podcast, so I guess that's good.
Not yet.
We will not have an episode next week, so just be aware we are taking a week off because I need a week off. I'm going to sit on my couch on Sunday next week, and I'm going to catch up on the Great British Baking Show.
And ooh, yeah.
I can be angry about them trying to cook s'mores instead of being angry about bad vampire writing. So that'll be a relief.
The taco episode.
I haven't gotten there yet. I've only heard. I've heard about the s'mores. I've heard about the tacos. I can't even wait because I need that kind of nonsense in my life.
Yeah, get to it.
But after that week, we will have some more episodes coming out. We have some stuff we've recorded. We have some stuff we're going to record. It won't be Vampire Chronicles related, at least at first, but I'm sure we'll circle back to Vampire Chronicles stuff. We may do the movie. We may do some of the books at some point. I don't know how many of the books. There are a lot of books, but
there are a lot of books.
We may get into a couple of them. And obviously we will be doing season 2 because I will need to watch it. I will not be able to not watch it. And I will need to talk about it. So we will be covering that whenever that comes out. I don't think that's till next year, though. In the meantime, let us know what you thought of season 1. Let us know what changes you liked, what changes you didn't, and what lingering questions you still have for the show. Like, what are you still hoping that they'll answer in season 2? What are you still wondering about?
All right, fiends. Talk to you another day.
Bye.
This is Tori and Chell wishing you a fangtabulous evening with vampire wishes and batty nightmares.
This podcast was edited by me, Tori. Our music is edited and mixed by Vikra the Never Living and includes Dark Halloween Night by Chase Allen Willis and Toccata and Fugue in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach, performed by Kevin MacLeod.
Thank you for listening. Please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you really want to join our hellish crusade, please leave us 5 stars on Apple and Spotify. Be sure to tell your favorite blood-sucking fiends about vampires ruined my life.